The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
My job is not to get guys to college. My job is to get guys through college. You know, like nothing makes me prouder than when Chris Collins called me from Northwestern and says, you know, Derek Parton's the best leader we have. You know, and that leads me to believe that if he didn't learn how to be coachable when he played for me, he was going to struggle when he went to Northwestern.
Our guest on this special episode of the Hoop Heads Podcast is Babe Kwasniak, the boys varsity basketball coach at Villa Angela St. Joseph High School. Babe was a three-time state champion as a player at VASJ under his father, the coaching legend Ted Kwasniak. He played Division I basketball at West Point, where the discipline he learned at home served him well during his time in the Army. Upon returning to his alma mater as the boys varsity basketball coach in 2010, Coach Kwas led VASJ to five straight state championship games, winning it all in 2013, 2015, and 2017. His father, Ted, has been his assistant throughout his tenure as the leader of the Viking program. During the episode, Coach Kwas and I talk leadership, work ethic, the impact of being a West Point graduate, his relationship with his father, and the challenges of being a high school basketball coach in 2018. This is the first in a special series of interviews we have planned with local high school coaches. We're calling this series, Get Schooled. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Coach Babe Kwasniak from Villa Angela St. Joseph High School. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with our very special first ever Cleveland area high school basketball coach, Babe Kwasniak. And Coach, just want to talk to you a little bit first about your playing career coming up here in the Cleveland area, and talk about what you did to make yourself into the kind of player that you ended up playing Division I basketball at West Point.
First off, Mike, thanks for having me. This is it's an absolute privilege to be here. As you know, we have so many great coaches in Cleveland. I think that's kind of what separates us from a lot of other areas. And I think I'm excited as you get some of these guys in.
Yeah, for sure. I can't wait to have conversations. I'm so glad to be able to have the opportunity to have you be the first guy to step in.
And I just, through the military, I've lived so many places: Seattle, Atlanta, Kansas City, New Jersey, Texas, and I've always felt like we're a hotbed kind of high school basketball coaches and have such a big impact on my life. So I'm excited as you kind of move along further and get some of those guys. I'm a product of coaches. My dad was a coach, you know, growing up. He was a coach at St. Joe since 1982. They had a pretty good player by the name of Clark Kellogg, who, if you ask my dad, was a better high school player than this guy named LeBron James, you know, in high school. And I'm the proverbial gym rat. I mean, I was just around it my whole life. One of my favorite stories along those lines, and this kind of depicts how I grew up, is one Halloween, my dad said, my mom said, you know, what are you going to do with Babe? Are you going to leave him, you know, to go trick-or-treating? And my mom didn't know, but my dad took me to the gym for practice because I didn't want to miss practice. Well, it turns out that I must have been tired that day because I was excited about Halloween and excited about trick-or-treating. So I climbed up in the bleacher and I fell asleep. My dad forgot that he brought me to practice, so as I woke up as a 7 or 8 year old kid, I woke up to a completely dark gym, kind of like the Batman Batcave experience.
And you missed Halloween.
And I missed a little bit of Halloween, so I'm sure my dad got chastised by my mom and came back and picked me up. So, and I know your ties, you know, being from Strongsville. I mean, there probably hasn't been a gym in Cleveland that I haven't been. You know, I just kind of grew up around the game, my entire life. I didn't see past high school basketball. So when people say, did you see yourself going to West Point and serving in the Army and working for cancer diagnostics and now doing things in leadership and public speaking? No. All I ever saw in my future was playing for my dad. Was playing for my dad and hopefully winning a state championship. Was very blessed and fortunate enough to, we won three when I was there, three out of the 4 years. The 1 year we didn't win, we lost to a coach named Bob Krasancic, who's now at Mentor, who was at Girard, and our coach wasn't very good. You know, my dad, yeah. That was the only year we didn't win.
Got to put the blame in the right place, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And, those were some great years in the 90s. I mean, we had had so many incredible players. I look now when you talk about people just doing their time, right, and trusting the process and all these things that I know you're going to talk about in this podcast. I played behind two pros growing up at St. Joe's. So the first guy was Tony Miller. Played at Marquette, I believe led the NCAA in assists. I think he's still in the top 10 in the history of the NCAA in assists. And then he went on to Belgium, had like an 18-year NBA career. And the other guy was London Fletcher, who played 16 years in the NFL, never missed a game as a middle linebacker, whose numbers are comparable, if not better, to Ray Lewis, and should be a first ballot Hall of Famer and will definitely be a Hall of Famer. Never once did I think, you know what, I'm going to transfer. You know what, I'm going to – I never thought of anything, you know, but making it through and getting better. You know, so I just – in my experiences, and especially like, you know, and decided to go to West Point, I go back to the way I was raised. And the story I tell is, and I know, you know, you're going to talk about, you know, specializing now, right? Because that's the sexy thing now is these kids play one sport. And I think it's disgusting, actually. You know, it's repulsive. And in my own house, my oldest boy is going to be a freshman for me this year, and he's going to play four sports. So not only, you know, he's, you know, not only not specialized in one, he's going to play two in the fall. So he'll run cross country and play golf in the fall. So anyway, going back to growing up, I played three sports. I played baseball, football, and basketball. Ironically, like my dad was a basketball coach, but my best sport was probably baseball, and my favorite was football. And you know, football practice was what it was. I had to get a waiver signed because I didn't weigh 100 pounds. in the eighth grade, I mean, I didn't weigh 100 pounds. I was probably closer to 80. So I just would go get the tar kicked out of me every day of practice. You know, tackle football. And our coach was pretty tough. He was arduous, you know, he was old school. And I remember I came home one night and I told my mom at dinner, I said, my dad wasn't home yet. And I said, Mom, I've made the decision to quit football. And she said, well, that's fine. You just, you know, you got to tell your dad. And my dad gets home. He was a high school basketball coach, but he worked at AAA. That was how he took care of his family. My dad gets home. I look him right in the eye like he taught me. And I said, Dad, I made the decision. I'm not going to play football anymore. This was right during the season that I was going to quit. And he looked me right back in the eye and he said something that stayed with me for the rest of my life. He said, that's fine, son. Where are you sleeping tonight? And the lesson there was, you know, if you start something, you finish it. And not doing that was unacceptable as a Kwozniak. I look back to everything in my life, everything I've ever done, and I go back to that lesson.
Traces back to that moment.
The first day I was at West Point, Mike, you get in an auditorium. They say, you know, before they say, you have 90 seconds to say goodbye to your family. One of the speeches, the general gives, the lieutenant general, which at our point was General Chrisman, Dan Chrisman. He said, look to your left and look to your right. You know, two out of three of you might not be here. And because of what my dad taught me, I mean, I wasn't the smartest guy. I wasn't the most athletic, and I had no military background. But my first thought process was, sucks for the person on my left and sucks for the person on my right. Because maybe they'll kick me out of here, but I'm not going to quit. Just in this day and age, that's like, you know, basically the number one thing I try to teach my kids, my players, is that really the only way you can fail in life is if you don't try. I know, you know, you're the first guest you had on here was Alan Stein, and he talks all the time about, you know, the only two things you control, attitude and effort. And a big piece of that effort is, you know what, there's just no exception for quitting. That's the only way you can really fail. So I look back to, you know, even when I played, you mentioned I played Division I basketball. I played at West Point. Every year I played for a guy named Dino Gaudio, who's now at Louisville. He was with ESPN, was the head coach at Wake Forest. Every year he would say, you know, Kwozniak, you stink. We're going to bring in somebody to recruit over you. I heard that for 4 years. I started for three, and I was the team captain for two. At the time, I was the only two-year captain in the history of West Point. You know, so that was just something that, you know, my whole life is just – I was never, you know, I was 5'11", weighed 135 when I graduated from St. Joe's, and I always felt like in order to accomplish my goals, I had to outwork everybody, you know, and you couldn't stop, you couldn't quit. And even now, I've had six kids play Division I, Mike, for me, you know, from St. Joe's, and I talk about this all the time with my dad. I've never coached a kid, and I don't think this is arrogance, I think this is my self-awareness. I've never coached a kid who works as hard as he thinks he does. And I've never coached a kid who's worked as hard as I did, you know, and that's maybe that's kind of like my holy grails. I'm just sitting there in this, you know, waiting to say, you know, like I was obsessed with it. I was absolutely obsessed. And I think a lot of these kids think they are. And I'm hopefully I can provide some perspective that maybe you think you are, but you're probably not.
So how do you avoid the frustration that comes with coaching players who have maybe more physical gifts and tools than what you had? And yet their work ethic and their attitude and their effort don't match what you brought to the table. That's what always, I think as a coach, that was one of the things that was most frustrating for me, because I feel like I was sort of in a similar position to you. The guys that I grew up competing against, if you put us in a foot race, I was probably going to lose. I'm 6'3". I never dunked once in my entire life. So I had these challenges, but yet I feel like my work ethic, just like you, that's what put me over the top. And so when I coached with players who I saw that had maybe more physical tools than me, I would find myself getting frustrated. So how do you deal with that from bringing your own perspective down to your players?
Well, that was my biggest struggle at first, especially because when I started coaching at St. Joe's in 2010, when my coaching career started, I was the Armed Forces coach. And I used to, while I was at West Point, I used to go to Duke camp and coach. It's kind of a funny story. Coach K told me, you know, a while back, he's like, well, if you want to coach, you need to start, you know, you need to start by doing this, by coaching the Armed Forces. And, you know, when I was coaching the Armed Forces, I mean, these are guys that if they weren't playing for us, they were literally getting shot at in the base in Iraq, right? So my biggest adjustment was when I got in high school, it was like I wasn't dealing with soldiers, right? And this is the time in their life they're supposed to screw up, Mike. You know, they're supposed to, you know, you talk all the time about decisions. They're supposed to make bad decisions, but we're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to fix them, right? And then if they make good decisions, you have to laud those too. You have to tell them, you know, they're doing a great job, and tell them that they're making, you know, good decisions. But I think the toughest part of that is just comes with getting older, you know, comes with getting wiser. I literally have the best assistant coach in Ohio next to me. My dad's 77 years old. He's won 7 state championships. And there's not a day that goes by where, you know, I don't even know if you call it good cop, bad cop. You know, he's the grandfather. He's uh-huh. Hey, you're being too tough on these guys. You know, but a big piece of that is teaching them to be coachable, right? Like, my job is not to get guys to college. My job is to get guys through college. You know, like, nothing makes me prouder than when Chris Collins calls me from Northwestern and says, you know, Derek Parton's the best leader we have. You know, and that leads me to believe that if he didn't learn how to be coachable when he played for me, he was going to struggle when he went to Northwestern. Brian Parker, a kid is at Marist, has 2,400 points going into his senior year. He's got a chance to be Marist's all-time leading scorer, which I think right now is Rick Smith's. You know, if he didn't learn how to be coached, then I think he would struggle, you know, going there. And, you know, you'll have a lot of area coaches. Well, let's not get it twisted. You know, they don't get you scholarships, right? These kids get themselves scholarships. But I think a big responsibility we have is to give them the tools to succeed at the next level. And a big tenet of our program is being coachable. Because if you're not coachable, discipline's a form of love. And I'm going to get on you. You know, you're going to get yelled at. And getting yelled at is a skill, right? And that's something we work on all the time. And I say all the time, when I went to West Point, I mean, I played for my dad, and I was around nuns all the time in school. So, like, getting yelled at was no big deal. I was really good at getting yelled at. And I still am. My wife still yells at me all the time. Right? Getting yelled at is a skill set that will benefit you for the rest of your life. Understand they are not correcting the person. They are correcting the action. So if you can learn how to be coachable and you're around good coaches, it's kind of tough to fail, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it is. I think you're hitting on, you know, a couple good points there. One is that, you know, the people who really want to get better at whether it's basketball or life or anything, those are the people that are willing to take feedback and take criticism and not look at it as a personal attack on them, but rather look at it as, this guy is trying to make me better. And he's giving me advice, whether it's basketball, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in the music room, whatever it is, you're getting that advice from somebody, and now you're taking that into practice. How do you accept that advice and taking it into practice and make yourself better? And then the other thing that I pulled out from what you said there was, you're not only judging yourself. Sure, you've produced at VASJ, you've produced 6 Division I players coming out of your program. That's tremendous. Any coach would be proud of that. But what I hear you saying is, it's not just the fact that they've had success when they've gone on to the next level. It's 15 years from now, they're going to call you back and they're going to say, hey, coach, now I'm working at XYZ company, or now, you know, I've got 2 kids who are, you know, having success in this area, or I own my own business, or hey, I just opened a restaurant, coach, why don't you come and have dinner with me? And those are the things that I think sometimes as coaches we tend to get short-sighted with, and we just focus on those wins and losses, and we sometimes, unfortunately, coaches will look at players as just somebody that can help them to meet their basketball goals. Mm-hmm. And I think the best coaches out there are people who still care. There's nothing that makes me feel better as a coach than somebody that I coached 15 years ago calls me up, and you know, there's nothing better than when you pick up that phone and somebody says, "Hey, coach," even though I haven't been their coach for 15 years, and now they're, you know, they're only 10 years younger than me. I'm 48 and they're 38, and they're still calling me. They're still calling me coach. There's nothing better than that.
Couldn't agree more. I couldn't possibly agree more. One of my mentors in my life has been Doug Collins, who just got to know through camps and with Chris Collins, coaches Derek Barton at Northwestern. And every time I'm having a rough time and I'll call coach and kind of whining to him a little bit, he always tells me that. He said, "You're in a profession where you're not going to know what kind of job you did until 20 years from now." Mm-hmm. And I always try to realize that, you know, like you're not going to know how good of a job you did until, you know, did you produce a lawyer? Did you produce a doctor? Did you produce, you know, kids that are giving back to society? You know, or are they understanding that it's about something, you know, bigger than themselves? I'll give you a quick story, Mike. I remember one time I was at some type of Under Armour function, and I had no business sitting at this table, and the NBA was doing like a census session, and they were going around the table, and they said, "What's your biggest accomplishment?" And you know, there was a guy in the room by the name of Steph Curry, and like he went first, and he's like, "Two NBA championships, two MVPs." Like, how do I go after that, right? And then there's a couple, you know, very very successful NBA players, high school coaches. So they get to me, and I just completely choked. I said, you know, we've now gone to 5 state championships in a row, which in Ohio, nobody's even done, not even Akron St. Pete, where LeBron went. You know, afterwards, you know, after I thought about that, it was such a shallow, obtuse answer, right? And now when I go and I do some speaking, I always go back to that meeting. Because now if I had to answer that question, I would say that my biggest accomplishment is the fact that I've been at St. Joe's now for 9 years. In the 9 years, I've had 7 kids decide to serve the armed forces. And they say, "Well, you know, are you trying to like strengthen the military?" No. But the number one thing the things I always try to teach all my kids is, number one is to be coachable like we talked about. Number two is to be a better teammate. Because whatever you do, if you're a better teammate, that's going to benefit you in any factor in life. And then number three, and I think this is what separates us, is to be a leader, right? And if you encompass all those things, that says that you understand that being a part of a team is about being part of something bigger than yourself. So when I have kids that go and say, "I'm going to serve my country," right, based on the experience that I had with you, coach, that tells me they get it, that it's not about them. So I look back, and I mean, I get chills just telling the story. You know, one of my kids who served in the 82nd Airborne Division, after he got out, he went and became a head manager for Steve Wojciechowski at Marquette, who's become a good friend of mine. So I look back and like, that's my biggest accomplishment, because in a world where, you know, a lot of kids think that people owe them something, and I'm always trying to teach them, your parents don't owe you, you know, your teachers don't owe you, your coaches don't owe you, you know, and if you're grateful for what you do have, it's going to be hard, you know, to be entitled to what you think you don't have. And for those guys that went and served, you know, our country, like that's by far my biggest accomplishment. And I don't care how many games I win or how many games that, you know, state championships we go on to win, you know, those young men get it. And, you know, we talk all the time, you know, Mike, there's so many levels too, right? I'm not a big equal opportunity guy. So my 15th guy, I'm going to coach my 15th guy just like I'm going to coach, you know, our first guy. And we talk all the time about Division I, but there's kids that go on to play Division II, Division III basketball. There's kids who won't go to play college basketball. But if they learn how to be a good, if they learn how to be coachable, they learn how to be a good teammate, and if they learn how to become a leader, then I did my job. And hopefully, like you said, they'll call me like they did you and say, "Hey, Coach Quaz, you know, those were the best years of my life, and what you taught me is invaluable." And I see that every day because it happens with my dad. And I still think back to the way I grew up. I mean, I can name every single coach I had. They had such an impact on me. I was saying one of my favorite drills when I was a kid was I lay in bed and shoot a basketball to myself. It's almost like, you know, these kids don't do that anymore.
No, nobody does it. Nobody does that anymore. I try to get that to happen at my house. I got a daughter who's a freshman and my son is in 7th grade. And, yeah, to get him to lay on the floor and just shoot the ball up in the air, which is, you know, something I did whenever I was watching TV. Yeah, it just doesn't happen. And
my 2nd grade coach was a guy by the name of Jim Dellariva, and he was a fireman. And he used to close your eyes. You don't need a basket, or even if you have a ball, and shoot a free throw in bed. And I remember my very first free throw that I shot in college basketball was at Cameron Indoor Stadium. And I went back to what Jim Dellariva taught me, you know, what Jim Dellariva taught me in the 2nd grade. I closed my eyes at the free throw line. I'm like, man, hopefully I'll open them before I shoot this thing.
Yeah.
And I envisioned myself. And
absolutely. I think that's one of the things that people sometimes take for granted. You know, we hear about successful coaches who have won multiple state titles, or we hear about coaches that have produced Division I players, and yet here you are, even with all the success that you've had in the game, talking about somebody who was your second grade coach, who probably, in a lot of people's eyes, wasn't somebody who was an expert in basketball, was probably just, in all likelihood, somebody's dad on the team. And yet, here you are, this many years later, that person still had an impact. And I think sometimes people take for granted how important those first coaches are in terms of having an impact on how where kids end up and what they do.
That shows you how much it's changed too, Mike, because he was not the father of a kid. I think nowadays that's the way it is now. Now it's almost like guys don't coach unless they have kids.
Yeah.
This guy did it because he loved it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, one of my
what an advantage for you.
Yeah.
Be able to have somebody who was like that at that time.
And that's how much it's changed though, right? Like one of my Thad Mata was telling me this one time, and it's always resonated with me. You know, he said parents have zapped a lot of the fun out of coaching, right? So you think about it back in our day when we were growing up, not to be that guy, but it's like they did it because they loved it, they got something out of it. Now, you know, you don't want to deal with the issues. It's just not worth it. I'm in a job where, I'm pretty confident I lose money coaching at the high school I do. And that's not why I do it. I don't do it for the money. But in a situation where it's just, you know, it's not where you're doing it to feed your family. And, you know, I know, you know, you're a PE teacher. A lot of times now teachers are outside of the building, you know, where it used to be a prerequisite.
For sure.
Now it's almost that dynamic has changed, which is just, it's just made it a lot different. You have to meet kids where they are.
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult, I think, you know, if you're a coach and you're not in the building. I think that's much more of a challenge. You're not building that same rapport with the kid every day, seeing him in the hallway and getting a chance to talk to him. I think that can be a challenge for sure. Talk a little bit about, I want to circle back to kind of the beginning of the conversation and talk about how you ended up at West Point, because that's one of the things that, you know, when I found out that you were going to be coming on that I was fascinated to talk to you about, because I've had an opportunity to go and visit the Naval Academy and also visit the Air Force Academy. I haven't had the privilege of getting to West Point yet, although I think it may be on the docket at some point moving forward. But one of the things that I'm always struck by when I go there is you see, you know, these young people that are, you know, between the ages of, you know, 17 and 22, and just the level of discipline that is instilled in them, and the level of discipline that they just have to have for themselves just to even want to set foot in that environment for the first time. And I always wonder, and the thought that goes through my head as I'm sitting there is, what made them make the choice instead of going to a state school and getting a good education and being able to, for lack of a better word, have fun and do what you want and have freedom and have a radio in your room and do these other things. To me, it always strikes me that those kids have to be tremendously mature and have a vision for themselves that most kids at the age of 18 or 19 just simply don't have. So I just was curious to hear your process of how you ended up there.
Yeah, it's man, I think Drake made a song about it, you know, God's plan. It's pretty incredible. I was actually, didn't understand why I wasn't recruited more. I played with a great player by the name of Melvin Levitt. I think he was drafted in the second round. We had some great teams, you know, in high school. I think we had seven guys off my senior team go Division I. I was very late. I was recruited very late in the game. Pete Carrillo time was at Princeton. I don't know if you'd call it an Ivy League offer, but they wanted me pretty bad.
Right,
I couldn't
right,
afford that.
Right.
The only other option I had, Division I, was Cleveland State. The place where I was probably going to go was Wheeling Jesuit.
Okay.
In West Virginia. Now, Cleveland State, the coach actually, the night he liked me, came and saw me at a summer league game. The next day he got in trouble. And this is kind of an unbelievable story. A guy by the name of Kevin Mackey. I think he works at the Pacers now. You remember Coach Mackey?
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time. I have some great coach. I have some great, great Coach Mackey stories because my father taught exercise physiology and kinesiology at Cleveland State for his entire career. So I spent a lot of time around the program and around the guys that were part of that. And of course, the team that made it to the Sweet 16.
That's right.
Mouse and Eric Mudd and
Pat
that whole, that, right,
yep,
and all that group. So I spent a lot of time around the program. So certainly, I don't know if our audience is aware of, but I'm certainly well aware of Kevin Mackey's demons. And yet at the same time, what a great you know, what a great basketball mind he was.
Oh, Bobby Huggins stole that system from Kevin Mackey.
Absolutely.
Talked to him. So, yeah, so he got in trouble. I go up to visit West Point because Randy Ayers was a coach at Ohio State at the time. He was recruiting Melvin Levitt to Ohio State. Before that, unbeknownst to me, Randy Ayers was at West Point as an assistant, I believe. And you know, so I go up there, and this is where, you know, having people who believe in you is so important, right? My father, I went and visited there. I didn't understand anything about it. My father was in Vietnam, but never talked about it. You know, I didn't have like, you know, I didn't play a lot of G.I. Joe or anything growing up.
Not a military family necessarily.
I didn't understand, Mike. I thought the Army Navy game was played by enlisted guys. I didn't understand any of it. And I went up there and, you know, I saw, you know, Coach K on the wall and Bobby Knight on the wall. And I knew my dad was a coach. And I can tell my dad would never say, you know, Coach K said his parents made him go there. Like, my dad would never give me that ethnic pressure to say, you're going there. But I knew, I can tell by the look in his eyes, you know, it was like, you know, guys, where you're from don't make it to places like this. And now I look back, I mean, everything in my life has come from there, right? I met my wife there, who I'm married to for 17 years. I mean, every job I've had has been because I chose to go to West Point. Everything in my life, all the experience I am sitting in this room, you know, people I've met, is all because I went to West Point. So, you know, it's just sometimes, you know, God just has an amazing way of, you know, putting you in the right places, right? And you know, good choice, bad choice, your choice, right? And the decision to go to West Point, you know, changed my life. And, you know, I just laugh now just watching how recruiting happens, right? Like I tell my kids, you know, I wasn't even an official, like, recruit at West Point. You know what I mean? I'm not even so sure they wanted me, right? So it comes down to, you know, it comes down to desire a lot of times, and it comes down to, you know, taking advantage of opportunities. And I feel like, just like I feel like a coaching, like maybe I didn't really choose coaching. I feel like coaching kind of chose me, right? And, one of my buddies who I actually hired in business, who was a West Point and a Kellogg graduate, he said it perfectly one time. He said, for most people, kids that go to college, it's the four best years of your life. West Point's the hardest. And you know, nobody just barely makes it through West Point. So you always look back and you say, I'm never going to do anything that hard. And I think anybody you talk to, whether it's Coach K or, you know, anybody you talk to will tell you that it's the case. Like, you don't just squeak by West Point, right? If you get through there, you know, it's legit and you made it. And it's funny, you talked about the discipline. I feel like, you know, that kind of gets misperceived because I got that at home from my parents, especially my father. That's where I learned discipline, right? You know, the Army's not going to give you discipline, right? They're not going to instill it in you. I mean, it's just something that, you know, that it's a standard. And if you don't meet the standard,
you know, can't stay.
You can't stay. Right. Absolutely, you can't stay. So, everything in my life now is a reflection of being an academy graduate. You know, like I don't really feel like a basketball coach. I feel like a leader. I just happen to coach basketball. If you come to one of our practices, like right away in the first 5 minutes, like you would laugh. You'd say, this looks more like a military unit than it does a basketball team. Our kids echo commands, and you know, we believe in enthusiasm, and we train the way we fight. So we practice the way we're going to play. And that's a lot of those things have come from just the lessons I learned at the military academy.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to approach things in terms of thinking about those 4 years that you were there impacting you in such a way that you grew from it, and it basically formed you into the type of person that you are today.
Well, I tell my kids the same thing. Like, they're stressing over a test, or they're stressing over someone, you know, said something about them on social media, or they're stressing about, you know, whatever issues they think they may have. And here's the real deal. Like, at West Point, we did the same thing. But you know what? 20 years from now, 15 years from now, 30 years from now, you're not going to remember flunking that WPR, as they call it, at West Point, or you didn't do, you know, this many push-ups, or you did this. You know what you're going to remember? You're going to remember the guy to your right and the gal to your left. You're going to remember the people you did it with. So I talk to kids all the time. It's about relationships. And unfortunately, because of social media and because of these stupid cell phones, our relationships are a mile wide, right? They reach all the way out because they can, and they're an inch deep. And that's sad, man, because a lot of times we're missing the good stuff. We're missing the depth of these relationships. Like, you know, we'll have reunions, and like, I'll see some of my friends, and it's not even necessarily that I fought in a war with them. But it's like, I just miss them. And I talked to them a while. And right. we'll cry. It'll be that emotional. Like, the bonds are that strong. So that's just something I try to teach with my players all the time. Like, I try to say, you know, like, I mean, when you guys tell someone you love someone, you got to mean it, you know. And you know, don't get on this and this is my brother, this is my, on social media, when you haven't even got to learn each other.
Right, you haven't sat down with them and had a conversation that's more than 2 minutes long.
Correct. And not just saying, hey, this guy's got 7 offers and this is my brother. No, it's not your brother. You don't even know this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so we try to work on the depth of our relationships. You know, that's just really important. And again, I know Alan was on before me, and I know his big thing is that I steal all the time is try to be where your feet are. And that's something, when you're talking about self-awareness, that's even in my own family life, that's something I have to get better at, because I'm always with my guys, you know, 24/7 thinking about how we can get better and how we can build a team. And, you know, and that's the good stuff. I mean, we have somehow lost in this great team sport. We've just individualized it, have we? Haven't we? Like, with rankings and all that. I mean, like, what happened to, like, going to the playground and, you know what, no matter how good these guys are, no matter how much bigger, stronger, faster they are, if we play the game the right way and because we know each other, we're going to beat them. Somewhere amongst all this, we've lost that.
Yeah, I think – so I'm going to jump back to something you said a few minutes earlier, and it's something that stuck with me, and that is that you said that despite the fact that you played behind – two guys who, one had an 18-year pro career in basketball and one who had a 16-year NFL career, the word that you used was, I never even thought about transferring. And you and I both know that in today's basketball world, oh my God, not only would you transfer if you had a guy who was an 18-year pro and a 16-year NFL veteran, you might transfer because the guy in front of you, the coach put his arm around him after practice, and that might be enough. Look, the coach likes him better than me. I got to go somewhere else. And it's such a different – like, for me, growing up where I did, I mean, I pretty much knew the guys I was going to play with in high school from the time I was – I moved to Strongsville in second grade. And basically from that point forward, I can look at – there was a picture of this group of kids that played together when we were in fifth grade. And we went to this tournament, you know, obviously travel basketball and AAU and all that stuff didn't exist in the same form that it does today. And we just went to this tournament and played against other communities. And I look at that team photo, and it's the same guys that either were my teammates in basketball when I was in 10th, 11th, 12th grade, or it was kids who ended up gravitating to other sports. But it was, you know, the 10 or 12 sort of best guys. And everybody
had,
right, everybody was together. And there was never a thought, you know, I mean, I never got to seventh or eighth grade and thought, oh, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to transfer here, or I'm going to go to this place or whatever. I wanted to stay and be with my friends and play and fight through and do the things that I needed to do in order to be successful. And today, I mean, you see it, I'm sure, much more than I do, and are much more impacted by it. Kids, something doesn't go well, or the coach doesn't give them what they need, or the parents don't think that you're pushing them hard enough to get, again, the coach isn't working to get me a scholarship, those people are going to pack up and they're going to go find somebody they think is going to do a better job. And I think ultimately a lot of it is just a lack of knowledge on the part of parents and kids of what it's really all about and how those things happen. And to me, it's just really unfortunate. And again, I'm not affected by it in the same way you are. I just am watching it at this point from afar.
And at this point, I agree with everything you said. It's just about, like, how do we model the behavior, right? I mean, that's one of the tenets at West Point. Like, how do we venerate and emulate good leadership? So no matter what I say, doesn't matter. It's what I do. Like, so for example, like, we'll have a chapel service before every single game. And the only rule we had, and I'll bring a guest speaker. I've had Lon and Fletcher and Clark Kellogg, and would love to have Alan Stein someday. And the only lesson we have, Mike, is we can't talk anything about basketball. So this is something my dad started. So we'll come in there and we'll talk about being a husband, being a brother, being a father. You know, being a Christian, you know, so life lessons, right? And I think that so much of this is, what are we doing to model the behavior? You know, because at the end of the day, you can either, I talked about, you know, with my dad not letting me quit, you can either say, okay, I'm going to go do something else, or you can make it better. You know, one of my favorite examples that just happened recently is I just joined a board. It's called a NEOPAT, Northeast Ohio Patriotism. And it's a bunch of guys.
Mike Swallow.
Yeah, Mikey Swallow. Yeah, yeah. If you know Mike Swallow, I guarantee you Mike Swallow's listening to this. Mike Swallow's the one who got me on the board. So it's a bunch of guys that they're all a lot of John Carroll guys, right? Very successful business guys in Cleveland. And about, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, they were just sick and tired of people saying this country's going to crap. They just got sick of it. So they built this nonprofit, where what they do now is they just promote patriotism. I mean, to the point where, like, they'll have families that, like, you know, lose things in Iraq, and they'll, you know, pay for education and just do it, like, making it. And so instead of saying, hey, there's nothing we can do.
They did something, which is a great lesson for all of us.
It's so inspirational to me. Like, I told them, like, they have their gala in March, which is always during our tournament, but I got to go to the first one this year, and I was blown. I mean, they were wearing a Purple Heart, and, like, I was in a glass jar of emotions the whole night, because it was just such a great lesson for young people. And I almost wish we could bring more young people there. It's like, here's the case study of, you know, you can either not do something, or you can say, hey, I don't like the way this is going, which is what most people do, right? This country's in bad shape. Well, do something about it. Mm-hmm. And these guys did. And, hey, this is a great proof on how we're always learning, right? Like, I mean, I'm a West Point graduate, a coach. I manage a $45 million book of business. And these guys, this was so inspirational, these guys, what they did. And I'm just so ecstatic to be part of their board now, because, you know, and all those guys are always asking me, because they all coach their youth teams, and they're all saying, hey, Quas, what do you do here? What do you do, you know, there? And, like, no, you guys are the ones that should be teaching these kids, because this is what it's all about.
Right, and I think you make a great point about modeling for people what the right choices are. And when you think about what you do as a coach, or what we do as parents, or what you do as a business owner, or whatever the case may be, that I can't remember the exact saying, I'm probably going to butcher it, but it goes to the effect of, I can't hear what you're saying because I'm watching what you do. And, you know, a lot of times we get caught up in people are saying things, and they preach one thing and say, hey, you should do this. And then on the other hand, here they are doing something that's the exact opposite. And kids, I mean, I see it every day as a teacher. If you don't model the right behavior, and then you say, hey, you should do this, but in the meantime, I'm doing something else, kids, they could care less what you're saying. They don't. Correct. They tune you out completely. If it's important for you to be on time, and you tell your players you need to be here at 3:00, and you roll in at 3:01, you're never going to have another player show up on time ever again. Mm. And if you do, and if you have somebody that's late, how do you then hold those kids accountable if you don't hold yourself to those same standards?
If you tell them relationships are important, and every time you're talking to them, you're on your cell phone and not looking them in the eye, they're gonna say, hey, no matter what coach says, it's obviously not that important.
Correct. Yep, because it's not important enough for him to do it. So I just think that everything that you just said about, you know, what you learned from your experience at West Point and what you've brought to your program at VASJ.
Well, I learned a lot of that from my father, too, Mike. Yeah. I watched my dad. My dad goes to church every morning. Every single morning he goes to 7:30 Mass. And, like, I grew up, you know, watching that, watching him go to Mass every morning. Right. So now, you know, I don't go every day, but I'm not going to miss Mass on Sundays because I watch my dad.
Right.
My dad, you know, was a Bobby Knight type. He was a Bobby Knight disciple, but I never heard him, you know, swear.
Right.
In terms of practice. Yeah. Like, I never heard him, you know, use, you know, derogatory language. I mean, he was, you know, always demanding without being demeaning, you know. Mm-hmm. So for that model of behavior, you know, as a coach,
right,
and how we should act, and you know, it's a tough line. It really is. It's a tough line because I have crossed the line before. Like, I'll go on record and saying I have crossed the line before. I have made a mistake. Like, I've made mistakes where I've said some stuff to kids that I shouldn't have said.
Right.
But when you love them as much as I feel like I do, and you have those relationships, you feel comfortable enough to do that.
Right.
The unfortunate part is, and I'll steal this right from my dad, is kids haven't really changed. They really haven't. You know, most kids want discipline. Mm-hmm. They really do. And most kids want to be pushed.
Right.
The part is the parents have changed. And a lot of times they say, hey, push my kid. And then as soon as you push your kid, like you said, they transfer them. I had a kid who's in his third transfer, you know, I mean, where the dad said, you know, you weren't using him right. He went out of, I mean, he's getting a Division I scholarship. He played 32 out of 32 minutes in our state championship game. We won the state championship. The next year he transferred him. I had a kid tell me that he didn't have enough hits on YouTube, so that's why he's transferring. I've had a kid tell me, you know, at a school that's won more state championships than any school in Ohio, that's produced more Division I players than just about any school in Ohio. I mean, I don't want to speak because I know Ed's has done well. And And he said that he's got a better chance of being a pro if he goes to, you know, another school.
Right.
I mean, these are just, they're just hard things to even argue with, Mike. They're hard things to even combat.
Yeah.
So I've gotten away from that. You know, I've said, you know, it's an old General Dempsey saying, I'm going to bloom where I'm planted.
Right.
Right. I'm going to make a difference in the kids who want to be here. I'm going to make a difference where I can, and not going to try to control the things that I can't control, which is all this other stuff.
You do what you do, and if you do what you do, you're going to attract the right kind of player, the right kind of family, the right kind of people to what you're doing. I think that's, you know, that's something that a lesson that all of us can learn is, you know.
And a lot of these, don't get it twisted, a lot of these college coaches, and I've, you know, been fortunate enough to deal with them, I would love to see them in our role, right?
Yeah.
You know, especially when you talk about the public schools, just coaching the kids that you have to coach, right? And there's something to be said about grabbing the broom and sweeping the floor. You know, we have a tile floor at St. Joe's, and, you know, just, I mean, what's the percentage that is actually coaching? I mean, you know the percentage where I'm actually, like, drawing up plays?
Actually,
you know,
yeah, it's very, very small, like, anymore, and it's less and less, I'm sure.
And at a private year. School, you know, we're dealing with, hey, man, can these kids afford tuition? You know, that these kids you know, are you feeding them? Are they, I mean, I'm talking about, are you getting them ready for college through academics? Or there are just so many other factors. These kids have so many more ways to get in trouble than we had, right? They have so many more with social media. And, you know, these things happen. These locker room things happen. But now is there a locker room anymore? Like, whatever happens now, you know, it can be taken. I mean, like, those things happened back in our day. Like,
so here, I got a good story that you'll enjoy. So Richmond Heights, we're building a brand new
facility.
High school.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a grade 6 through 12. And the other day at our back-to-school meetings for teachers, we're in the meeting, and through the course of the discussion, it gets to, we have the architect up there, they're talking about the building and kind of going through what it's going to look like and what the plans are. And they show the locker room, and in the varsity locker rooms, which, you know, would be used by the football, basketball, baseball team, whatever, there's no showers. There are no showers built. And then there is a shower room next to the locker room, but that can only be accessed through the hallway. And so somebody in one of the teachers from the high school raises their hand and says, you know what, you know, so you're going to have kids walking out from the shower, you know, from the locker room to the shower room to take a shower. And the architect said, well, we conferred with all the coaches and the administration, and no one takes a shower anymore. So they're not even they're not even building a shower. And so it goes to your point of, you know, again, you think about when you played, I'm sure, when I played, like, you know, you finish the game, you go take a shower, everybody's talking, and, you know, and again, building relationships.
Yeah.
And now here, you know, what happens, you know, you're done talking at the end of the game. And kids just throw on their clothes, and, you know, they're out the door. And it's just a different time.
Working their phone, looking to see who posted the pictures.
Right, for sure. So it was an interesting, like, it was a revelation to me that smart building by the architects, because I'm sure the showers never would have gotten used if they were built. But it was very interesting, because I never would have thought of that. So,
but the other thing they're never going to change is you're never going to change relationships.
Yeah.
They don't have an app for that. The best leader I've ever been around in my life. He used to tell me all the time as a lieutenant in the Army, and he actually is a guy by the name of General Bob Brown. He played for Coach K at Army. And General Brown used to tell me all the time, he'd say, Lieutenant Kwasniak, soldiers don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And it's still in this day and age, that's all that matters. And probably my single favorite story is I coached a young man. I don't want to give his name out, but he went and played on Division I scholarship. Had some trouble history with his past. With his father, but not him. But he's at college. It's his third year in college. My phone rings at 3 o'clock in the morning. All right, pick up the phone. What's up, man? You know, something wrong? And he said, yeah, coach. You know, I got in some trouble. And he got a DUI. And you know, so, you okay? Did anybody? There was somebody in the car with him. No, everything's fine, coach. You know, I barely blew over. I mean, he got in trouble. He messed up. So at this point, I look at my clock, and now it says 3:04 on my clock. And I said, okay, and he's in a different state. So I say, what do you want me to do? And he goes, nothing, coach, but they said I got one phone call, so I called you. I mean, Mike, is there a better story of why we do what we do?
No, I mean, that's
He said, coach, I don't know, But I got one phone call, so I called you.
Yeah, and that's, to me, again, that's where the relationship that you built with that kid is what it's all about. Because going back to what I said earlier, there is nothing more gratifying in the life of any coach than to get a call from somebody that you coached years and years ago that calls you up on the phone and says, hey, coach, I just want to tell you about X or Y or Z or whatever the case may be. And the fact that you got that phone call tells me, one of my final questions to you is going to be, what is your program stand for? If you wanted something, if you could throw out there, what does the VASJ program stand for? To me, I don't even think now I need to ask that question. Yeah. To me, that story to me is what the program stands for. So I want to jump back and end on this, because this is something, again, that I'm interested in with you, is the relationship between you and your father, first as father-son, player-coach, and then coach-coach, and how you navigated that and how you felt about it and whether or not your feelings about it changed over time. Was it always positive? Was there ever any rough patches? Just kind of walk me through that as our kind of last topic here today.
Well, when I played for him, there were nights I went without dinner. You know, there were nights it's just one of those things where you just don't get to later in life till you realize just how special it is. And, my dad's just a special human being. I mean, and first off, as a coach, I mean, he's won 7 state championships, which is more than anyone in Ohio. I mean, our school has 7, and he's been on the bench for all 7 of them. So he's been assistant, I think, he's won 2 of them as a head coach. He's been assistant for 5. So you think about that.
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
That's incredible.
And he's not in the Hall of Fame. So if anybody, I don't know if Jerry Snodgrass or Sean O'Toole or anybody, like the fact that this guy's not.
You know, somebody, let's get to the committee. Let's get the committee on the phone. Come on, what's
Papa Quaz has got to be in that Hall of Fame. He was just an incredible coach. And X's and O's wise, you know, it was just, he just cared. You know, he was a father to all this, and he still is. So I think, I mean, I learned so much from that, but just in terms of just being a human being, like, you know, like my father, my father's number one thing is forgiveness. I mean, he's so good at, you know, he's so good at forgiveness. Every time he gets on the phone with the next player, it always ends, you know, whether it's Stan Kimbrough or Reggie Adams or Treg Lee or Reggie Stover or, you know, a lot of guys that I know you know, the conversation, or Boo Gibson or DeMonte Flanagan or Derek Parton, the conversation always ends with, I love you. You know, and my dad always tells our kids, you know, if you love somebody, you shouldn't go a day without talking to them, or you don't tell them that. You know, and that's just really important. And, you know, back to the forgiveness thing, like, there's not a week that goes by where I don't fire him. I fire him at least once a week. It's gotten better. Like, when we started, I fire him twice a week. Now I fire him once a week. But it's just his ability to see past the stuff that doesn't matter and to focus on the stuff that does. And he's just, that's the thing with our kids too. It's not just like respect for elders or respect that he's a legend. They respect him because they know how much he cares, because they know how much he loves them. And it's a thing where I'm really hard on him. You know, it's good cop, bad cop to the nth degree. But then just like a grandfather does, right? Like as a parent, you love your kids, but then you give them back. He's the one, you know, they're never wrong.
Right.
You know, they're always,
he's the sounding board. He's the counselor. He's the guy that talks him down off the ledge.
He's Santa Claus. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, he is. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of, it's invaluable, you know, it's special. And I try to, I try to enjoy it. I mean, there's not a place where whether I go to an Indians game or anywhere in the city, Mike, the first question I always get is, how's your dad? How's your old man? You know, I mean, every college coach you talk to, says, how's your dad doing? Right. So he's just, I mean, he's earned it. He's earned every bit of, you know, on Father's Day, I got a text from, Keith Dambrot, who used to be obviously LeBron's coach.
Right.
And I mean, he's got just great relationships. And it's always how's your dad doing? I mean, I've told the story before that Coach Huggins will come in and I'm like, Coach, who are you coming to see at Open Gym? He's like, I'm not coming to Open Gym. I'm coming to take your dad to lunch. You know, so he's just, he just really developed over the years and years. You know, and he tells these guys, you know, that's kind of neat too. So Coach Frischella used to recruit Treg Lee and Eric Riley and all these guys back in the 80s. And my dad will text him and say, I'm so proud of you. And Coach will call me and he'll say, like, I'm in tears. Like, your dad's telling me he's proud of me. You know, he watches every game I did, whether it's the TBT tournament or
right,
the NCAA.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, and it's just kind of it's just kind of fun to watch. And you know, he is. He's getting up there in age. I mean, his health hasn't always been great. And like, you know, he sits right next to me. You know, he sits in that top seat. We call it the throne. You know, his title is the Emeritus Mike, and kind of do whatever you want. And now it's really special because my son's going to be a ninth grader. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's like the whole
Rocky. That's amazing to have three generations.
No, it's the whole Rocky thing, incredible. Right? When yeah. Mickey says you're kind of like, you know, you're kind of keeping me alive, I think that's what our kids do for my dad. I think they kind of give him a reason. They get him motivation to kind of keep going on and to be around. And, I mean, you know, I mean, he goes so far back.
For sure.
That it just spans so many generations.
No question. You know? I think I told you, I remember after games when I was coaching and going and running, you know, coaches were going out after the game and running into your dad, and he was always, you know, was always good to me. And
appreciate
and that's
that,
again, though. That's something that it wasn't like he and I had any kind of prior relationship, but it's just, again, it's all in how you treat people.
Well, you get him on her. I know he'd love to come on.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I know he's been on a couple,
that'd be tremendous.
And he talks about that all the time too, Mike, because our coaching fraternity, we have less reasons to talk.
There's less reason to connect. Like now, you know, before you'd have to trade game tape or you'd have to, you know, you'd have all these things, and now it's just everything's done digitally. So again, you become more insular. You become much more of your own island, and it becomes, I gotta guess that being a high school coach is much more lonely even than when I got out of it 7 or 8 years ago. It's a much more lonely
profession. The seating meetings you don't do together. Remember?
You're sitting, everybody would talk. Yeah, absolutely.
I would joke that we would always get the number one seed because everyone was afraid of my dad. So we could have lost 12 games. We're like, man, I ain't having Coach Quaz. I'm not putting St. Joe's in the second seed because Coach Quaz is in this room. That happened one year with Richmond Heights. Like, yeah. Richmond Heights was better than us. Jason Fry was one of my best friends. And I'm thinking, like, Richmond Heights is getting the one seed. They had a better year than us. But Jason played for my dad, and, of course, like, they voted us number one. And I was like, you know, so. Yeah, but those were, as we get digital, like, some of it's really good. There's no doubt about it. Take these podcasts.
For sure.
Some of it's really good. But some of it's not so good. You know, some of it, I think, hurts the depth of our relationships. And so I think this all does connect because my dad's superpower is the depth of the relationship, not only that he has, but that he creates with generations and generations, is kind of what makes us who we are, right? Like we put on the back of a t-shirt a saying that says tradition never graduates. Well, a big part of our tradition is the fact that my dad's been here.
The actual tradition is connected. I mean, there's,
correct.
You know, it's one thing to be a coach who comes into a program and has not been a part of it, but now you're looking again, you have three generations that are part of what you're doing. I can't think of, as a son and as a father, I can't think of anything that would be more special than if you had all three of those generations together. That's just a credit to you and your family and what your dad's been able to build.
I appreciate that.
And what you've been able to do. And it's got to be just unbelievably thrilling every day to walk in the gym and just see the people that you love being there a part of what you love to do.
And that builds your culture when the guy who's the legend treats the manager as important as your best player. It's kind of hard not to have a high performing culture in that regard. You know,
absolutely.
Because then you realize, you know, maybe not everybody's the same, but everybody's on this team, and if you want to be good, like, everybody has to have a role to play.
For sure.
I think he's great at that.
For sure. Is there anything else you want to share before we get out of here? This has been just a tremendous conversation for our kickoff episode of Getting With High School Coaches here in the Cleveland area.
You know, I think, like I said, there's just so many guys that I think you'll eventually talk to that have been such, you know, great mentors to me. You know, Bob Krasancik and Eric Flannery. I mean, you're just talking about Sean O'Toole. I mean, so much of what I do is because of, you know, it's because of the fraternity. You know, and mentorship that's something I think through social media we've lost. You know, I mean, we've lost that a little bit too.
Well, it's shallow. I mean, it might still be there. You might reach out to somebody and you might get an email or you might get a tweet or they might be your friend on Facebook. But two people sitting down and actually talking about things that really matter in any kind of depth, it's much more challenging. We're all busier.
Sure.
We're all busier. Our kids are busy. We're busy. And so it makes it much more difficult to connect with people who aren't in your immediate inner circle at the moment. It's hard to expand those horizons in terms of who you're getting a chance to interact with.
And remember, like, back in the day when we do, you know, we had the five-star camps, you had all the camps, and you always said, oh, if you got one thing, it was worth it. Well, I feel the same way about this. Like, sometimes Eric Flannery gave me one tip on dealing with parents that, like, changed my coaching life.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, I mean, I can only hope that I maybe gave one or two things that one of your young coaches can grab onto and say, yeah, maybe I'll try that and kind of see how it works.
Because absolutely.
Sometimes that just that one thing can make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Babe, it's been awesome. Thanks. I appreciate it. Is there any way that people can get in contact with you if they want to just reach out to you that you want
to
share?
Yeah, I'm trying to get to Alan Stein / Greg White Twitter status. For some reason, like, those guys are just
can't quite get there. I told you earlier, you're awesome. You're awesome on Twitter.
Yeah, thanks.
You put a lot of good stuff out there that I try to retweet when I can get on. And again, among the million other things that we're all trying to do, I try to get on there and share as much knowledge with parents and coaches and players as I possibly can. So
all my buddies do is tell me how bad I am, Mike. So I'm glad you feel.
All right. Well, I feel like I feel like you're doing a good job.
Yeah, I think it's at Babe Quaz on Twitter. I think it's the same thing on Instagram. And again, yeah, I think my background's more in leadership. So I try to, and I love teaching leadership through basketball. So, you know, especially for young coaches. And I mean, my door is always open. So anytime a coach wants to come watch us practice, I'll always share. They're always welcome to come watch us practice, come check us out. I think the social media thing, like you said, is great, but you're not going to get the depth there as you can, as you can the other way. So
awesome. Babe, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. This has been fantastic. And for everyone out there, we'll catch you on our next episode. Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.